The outer buildings swirled up, intertwining with their neighbours in impossibly intricate patterns, until the very tips of their spires exploded with mana streams of every colour imaginable. Often it was difficult to distinguish one building from another, as they wove together like vines guided by a celestial gardener. Those of the inner city shot up like great crystal formations of green and blue, escaping the darkness of the underground in order to favour the world with a glimpse of their magnificence. Light from their mana streams spilled from the upper levels and faded just beyond the tops of the outer buildings. It was like looking at a waterfall of magical energy feeding life into the whole of Vale. And climbing even higher than any of these was the royal palace itself, a gleaming white tower formed into a perfect cylinder that dominated everything else around it. To Drake, the simplicity of its design had always been the secret of its special allure, a solid core to hold together a fragile beauty. The highest point of this, completely obscured by cloud cover, was where the city's power station was located. Not that he had ever been up there to see it for himself. Only the high mages and the king himself were ever permitted to enter. It was well past midnight by the time he made it through the final checkpoint and into the lower city. The massive tunnel sloped sharply downwards, and the road was packed with traffic as he dropped to the first level. He was now directly below the upper city's lush gardens, where the schools and most of the administrative facilities were located. But though there was plenty of brightness and daylight overhead, down here the sun never shone. The entire level was covered completely from end to end, as if to protect the top dwellers from possibly spoiling their day by looking down upon those who served them. Even so, there was no shortage of artificial light. There was never an outage, and despite the fact that those who lived here would never be allowed to move into the upper city, life was still pretty good, certainly when compared to the provinces. People usually worked normal shifts and were paid enough to provide for their families, though never enough to advance their status. Most of the 6 levels were dedicated either to housing or some kind of important manufacturing. Almost all mana-powered devices were made down here. Although the vast majority of top dwellers despised the lower levels, Drake had always taken the opposite view. Down here he'd found it much easier to imagine what the rest of the world would one day become. Top dwellers invariably lived in a stiff and proper way, but here people were free with their humour and wit, which meant there was always fun to be had. When he was still a rookie guard, he used to love going to the dance clubs with his co-workers. But one lesson he'd learned quickly was to make sure to change into his street clothes first. The royal guard was feared, even hated by some. Most people would simply avoid them altogether, although inevitably someone would get drunk enough to voice their opinion and end up getting themselves arrested. That was the one thing you never did if you wanted to remain living in Troy. You always kept your opinion to yourself. Dissent was not tolerated. And it wasn't as if he could simply ignore the matter if someone mouthed off, not if he wanted to get promoted. There was always someone watching. The directions given to him at the last checkpoint were unnecessary. He knew Troy like the back of his hand. He had spent 2 years of his life patrolling these streets before moving up top. And he'd been good at it, too. He seemed to have a gift for sensing trouble before it actually kicked off. His partner had said it was due to his talent for magic, that this had given him an intuition most people didn't possess. Though Drake had never been sure about the truth of this statement, he was grateful for the ability nonetheless. A perceived talent for magic meant that he would soon be considered for promotion to the upper city. There was only a handful of ways you could get there if you were not born to it, and that was most surely one of them. He wound his way to the east side until he reached the office of the magistrate. By then, the ghosts of his past were close to overwhelming. One in particular was especially haunting him. "Don't think about her," he scolded himself. But he couldn't help it. The picture of her face in his mind, soaked in tears and looking at him with immeasurable sorrow, would not be denied. He pulled into the parking garage and showed the attendant his identification. It was expired, but still good enough to get him through without a problem. At least Xavier had known when enough was enough. After parking Cal, he entered the office through the garage-level entrance. The lift was available, but he always preferred using the stairs. A hawker never took the easy way if he could help it. Such habits made you soft. At least, that was what he was telling himself. The real truth was, he didn't want to get too accustomed to the conveniences of Troy. This whole affair might well end up being one huge disappointment. Given even a small amount of encouragement, the tiny shred of hope that he couldn't quite shake off was likely to grow completely out of control. He'd already suffered enough the first time he'd been forced to leave. There was no way he wanted to feel any part of that pain again. Upon reaching the lobby, he stopped for a moment to simply stare at the room. The floor was made from brilliant blue tiles, with the seal of the magistrate displayed proudly in the very centre. As for the chairs provided for those waiting for their appointments, they were unrecognizable from the rickety and hard-to-sit-on offerings you found in the provinces. These were as plush and comfortable as anything you would see in a good-class home. Holopics of the line of kings covered the walls, and in their proper order. His eyes lingered for a moment on the aspect of King Nidar, and then he continued to gauge his surroundings. The glass doors leading out into the street were etched with the Lion of Troy, and noticeably clean of any dirt or fingerprints. An attractive young woman with honey-blonde hair and soft features was sitting behind the reception desk. Her bright yellow dress was neatly pressed and made from new material. Drake hadn't seen a woman looking like this in... He shook away the thought.
"Is the lift out of order?" she asked, as she noticed him standing by the stairwell.
Drake shook his head.
"I needed the exercise."
Her disapproving expression made him feel oddly uncomfortable. It was obvious from his worn jeans and threadbare T-shirt that he was not a city dweller.
"Can I help you?"
Drake pulled a slip of paper given to him at the final checkpoint from his pocket and placed it on the desk. The woman picked it up with the very tips of her fingers, as if implying that she might otherwise catch something from it.
"I see."
She nodded in the direction of the chairs.
"If you care to take a seat?"
Without a word, Drake did as he was instructed. Part of him wanted to shout out that there was once a time she would have fallen all over herself to make him comfortable when he walked into the room. She might even have flirted a little, if she was bold enough. With a small sigh, he suppressed the impulse. Right now, he was exactly what she took him for, a vagabond from the outer provinces.
Even so, she could at least show some manners.
After more than an hour had passed, a tall man in a deep crimson jacket with the Lion of Troy stitched in gold on the lapel entered the lobby and approached Drake. He was holding a set of keys and a piece of paper.
"You are Drake Shirazi?" he asked.
This was definitely a top dweller. Drake could tell by the accent.
"Yes, I'm Drake Shirazi."
"The magistrate told me to give you these."
He handed over both items.
"You are to wait at this address until you are contacted by Captain Mortimer. Do you understand?"
Drake looked at the paper. The only thing written on it was an address.
"Did he say when I would be contacted?"
he asked.
"A car will be waiting for you in the garage."
"I have my own car."
"I am aware of this. Arrangements have been made for its retrieval. You may take whatever you need from the vehicle, but you are to leave it with us."
Drake gritted his teeth. He should have expected this.
Xavier wasn't about to let him run around without knowing where he was, especially if he was being sent after the prince.
"I'll need to disengage the security," he said, trying to mask his irritation.
"Please do so. Now, if you will excuse me."
Drake watched as the man spun on his heels and strode from the lobby.
Damn it! He should have parked somewhere else.
Oh, well. Nothing to do about it now. He returned to the garage and saw that a truck was already backing up to his vehicle. Another car was waiting nearby. After grabbing his duffel bag and sword from the trunk, he turned off the security. Had they tried to take Cal with it on? He grinned at the thought. Once alongside the waiting car, he presented his piece of paper to the driver. In return, the man handed him a sealed envelope bearing the stamp of the Royal Guard. Inside was a new identification card, though still bearing his old holopic. After settling into the back seat, he stared at the ID. The image on his old one had been barely visible, faded away, just like everything else in his life. This one, however...
"Look at you," he muttered, "smiling like an idiot."
The picture had been taken on the very day he became captain of the Royal Guard. Prince Salazar had insisted he take a new one. To capture the joy of the moment forever, he had said. That was fine then. All it did now was mock him. He shoved the card into his wallet and looked out the window. The broad walkways were already filling up with people. The deep grey metal of the buildings was a stark contrast to the splendour of what was to be seen just one level higher. Nonetheless, to Drake, these buildings held a measure of their own beauty. Each one reflected the street lighting in its own unique way, capturing colours and images that would otherwise have gone unnoticed. The distorted images of passers-by, like otherworldly spirits haunting the city, made him smile for a moment. This faded as his eyes rose higher. Only 6 stories were allowed on this level, the top one serving as a support for the upper city. In fact, all 6 levels had been designed primarily to keep the upper city standing. It was a perfect metaphor for the reality of life. Brightly lit signs told him they were now entering the market district. Each level had a market of its own, but here at this one you could buy some of the best food and drink in Troy. He briefly considered asking the driver to stop when he spotted a manga juice shop. The thought of a frosty mug of manga juice pouring down his throat was almost too much. A silly thing to long for, really. But he couldn't help it. They still had to go down 2 more levels before reaching their destination. Before long, the spiralling road leading down in this direction became ever more jammed with vehicles, prompting the driver to pull over into the emergency lane. Drake couldn't help but notice the looks of envy and contempt from some of the occupants of other vehicles as they passed easily by. Being late for work even one time could be enough to get you fired. To reduce this risk, people usually did their best to live on the same level where they worked. Of course, there was always the possibility of a compulsory transfer, which could end up badly, especially if you couldn't find someone in the reverse predicament. This made apartment swapping quite a common occurrence. Even now, Drake could spot cars loaded down with bags and furniture. He tore his eyes away and leaned back in the seat. "Mind if I smoke?" The driver shrugged. Drake took the cigar he had snatched from Barnaby, lit it up, and waited a minute to savour the aroma before rolling down the window. "Are you really Drake Shirazi?" the up-until-now silent driver suddenly asked. Drake closed his eyes, thoroughly enjoying the taste of the tobacco. "Yes." "You know, not everyone thought you were guilty." Drake cracked open one eye and furrowed his brow.
"Is that right?"
"Folks in the lower city, anyway. They think you were framed."
"Why's that?"
"It just didn't add up. I mean, why would you do such a crazy thing?"
"I think everyone knows why."
"Yeah, but that's just it. That sort of thing goes on all the time. No one talks about it, but we all know it happens."
"You do realize they had a holovid of the incident, right?"
"Yeah, I remember. But those things can be faked easily enough." Drake was finding it odd that this man would dare to speak so openly.
"It doesn't matter anymore," he said. "What happened, happened."
"I suppose. I just thought you should know that not everyone here believes you're guilty."
"Thanks. But I really think you should keep that kind of thing to yourself."
The driver glanced over his shoulder, smiling.
"You're not going to turn me in, are you?"
Drake returned the smile and clamped the cigar between his teeth.
"Nope."
Having broken his silence, the driver now seemed keen to talk. For the rest of the ride, he chatted almost non-stop about current events in Troy. Nothing was of particular interest to Drake. In fact, so little had changed, the man could easily have been recounting the days before his exile. Life in Troy had always been a series of routines. The only thing that was unusual was a mention of the rise in protests. Most people were afraid to speak out. But lately, it seemed, more and more were finding the courage.
"To be honest, I don't know what they have to complain about," the driver continued. "I mean, it could be a whole lot worse. At least here you don't starve. And I hear tell they might start allowing people to spend some time in the gardens." "So what's it all about?" Drake asked. "What are they saying they want?"
"Hard to say. The guards chase them off before they can do much. The ones they do catch aren't heard from again. Exiled, I imagine."
"Or killed," Drake thought. "What do you think about it?"
Hey, I just drive a car. Whatever their problem is, it's none of my business.
Drake could understand why the man would not want to become involved. Being a government driver was a great job. You would have to be a fool to risk losing it. They had now reached the level they wanted, and with no lanes on the streets this far down, set aside for emergency and government vehicles, the conversation stopped as the driver was forced to concentrate on navigating his way through the dense traffic. Under such circumstances, it could have taken them hours to get from one side to the other. Fortunately, their destination was not too far ahead after exiting the main highway. They pulled up, and Drake immediately slid out from the back.
"Are they letting you stay?"
the driver asked, as Drake shoved his sword inside the duffel.
"We'll see."
"Well, I for one hope they do."
"Thanks."
Drake waited for the car to move off before approaching the front of the building. Above the glass double doors was a number, that was all. No markings of any kind, nor were there any distinguishing features to indicate what purpose the building might serve. Just inside was a desk, behind which a young man in a blue jumpsuit was seated, thumbing through a stack of papers. He glanced up at Drake and let out an exasperated sigh.
"How many more of you are coming today?"
he said under his breath. Drake pulled out his identification and handed it over.
"I was sent by the magistrate's office,"
he cut in.
"Yes, I know. Why else would you be here?"
After looking at the ID, he opened his desk drawer and pulled out a sheet of paper.
"Says here you're to be accommodated on the top floor."
He chuckled.
"Not too many of you from the outer provinces get to stay there. You should feel privileged."
"Should I?" The man raised an eyebrow.
"Of course. How many of you lot do you imagine are given a real apartment to stay in?"
After tossing the ID card back across the desk, he sneered.
"I must remember to call maintenance. He's going to need a good scrubbing down after you're gone."
Drake tried to ignore the insult, but his anger got the better of him. He leaned in closer.
"You're from level 6, right?"
The man stiffened. Drake grinned.
"I thought so. I can tell by the way you slur your S's. Being a reception clerk is a hell of a promotion for anyone from that far down. Your parents must be so proud."
He folded his arms and held his chin between his forefinger and thumb in an exaggerated pose of deep thought.
"Let me see now. Your mum and dad both work in the sewage plant, right?"
The young man's face tightened, and he shot a quick look around to see if anyone was listening.
"How did you know that?"
he hissed.
"It doesn't matter. I bet it must have cost them a lot to get you this job. Do your co-workers know where you come from?" "They don't, do they? I wonder what they would say if they found out."
The door behind him opened, and a young woman in an identical jumpsuit entered.
"Are you Drake Shirazi?"
Drake allowed his gaze to linger on the man for a moment longer, before turning.
"Yes, that's me.
Captain Mortimer has asked me to see to your needs while you are staying here."
At the mere mention of the captain of the Royal Guard, the reception clerk's eyes shot wide, and beads of sweat formed on his brow.
"Please tell Xavier thank you when you see him," Drake said to the woman.
She nodded and then gestured for him to follow. Before doing so, Drake leaned down to whisper in the young man's ear.
"Perhaps you should be careful of how you treat people in the future. You never know who you're talking to, or who they might have connections to."
The young man nodded, but made no attempt at a reply. Drake followed the woman through the door into a long hallway. Doors lined both walls at regular intervals, each one bearing a number. Offices, most likely, he thought. He was familiar with this sort of facility. They were used to house those with entry passes from the provinces, as well as lower-level officials from the upper city who had extended business. They entered the elevator at the end of the hall and rode it up to the top floor. His apartment was just a short walk away.
"Do you know how to use a mana lock?"
the woman asked, upon reaching the door. Drake nodded confirmation and then placed his hand fully over the knob. It responded by glowing brightly, at the same time sending a mild shock running up his arm. A sharp clack after a few seconds indicated that the lock had made the connection.
"Everything you will need should already be here for you," his escort said. "I'll return later to check if there's anything further you require."
Drake watched as she walked briskly back to the lift.
A true bureaucrat, he told himself. The kind who moves up quickly, efficient and cold. If she did, in reality, look down on him for being from the provinces, she would never display even the smallest hint of this. In fact, he doubted that she ever let any feelings whatsoever show through. The apartment was very nice by provincial standards. Two bedrooms, a small kitchen, and a comfortable living room. The furnishings were all new and of good quality. There was even a hollow viewer hanging on the wall opposite the sofa for his entertainment. After tossing his duffel bag into the bedroom, an exploration of the various closets and cabinets turned up a good supply of both food and fresh clothing. The pants and shirts were of common style, T-shirts mostly, together with simple denim trousers, but they were a damn sight better than the rags he was currently wearing. It was really a bit surprising that Xavier would think to provide him with such amenities. But, of course, Xavier always had his own motives. Drake seriously doubted that any of it was done from kindness. He stripped off his clothes and jumped in the shower, letting out a long moan of pleasure as the steaming hot water poured over his body. This was yet another of those apparently simple pleasures that he had missed so much. He hadn't felt this clean in 9 years, and could have stayed there luxuriating in the feeling for hours. Eventually, though, the rumbling in his stomach urged him to finish and get dressed. Even the fresh clothes he selected felt good, clean in a way that he had almost completely forgotten. He turned on the holoviewer, bringing an image of the upper city garden to the screen. Carefully, he eased a slider at the bottom of the viewer to the left, continuing like this until he heard a familiar tune coming from the speakers. The screen was now filled with swirls of light and colour, dancing to the beat of the song while creating random patterns and shapes. Before he even realized it, he was smiling. "Don't get too used to this life," he scolded himself, settling down into an armchair. All the same, he couldn't help but enjoy it, even if it was only temporary. As it turned out, his pleasure was destined to be even more short-lived than he'd anticipated. Shattering the moment, the apartment door was suddenly thrown back noisily on its hinges. Instinctively, Drake leapt to his feet and started to run toward the bedroom, where his P-37 and sword were lying on the bed. But a sight of the black uniforms of the Royal Guard halted him mid-stride. 6 men filed inside, one of them instantly recognizable. Gerard Vernon, a corporal when Drake had been exiled, now bore the insignia of a sergeant. An ill-tempered man even on his best days, Vernon barked out an order. In response, his men spread out and began searching the apartment.
"Good to see you again, Gerard," Drake said, smiling.
Vernon sneered.
"Face the wall and place your hands on your head."
"I only just got here. What's this all about?"
Drake's tormentor stepped in close until their noses were almost touching.
"Give me a reason, exile. I'm begging you." "Take it easy, Sergeant," he told him, still maintaining his friendly smile. "I'm going."
He turned and did as instructed. Vernon frisked him thoroughly and roughly, and then shoved him flat up against the wall.
"Don't move from there until I tell you."
"Weapons in the bedroom," called a voice.
"Secure them in the hall,"
Vernon responded. After a few minutes, Drake heard the men leaving. Then a different voice spoke.
"You can go too, Sergeant. I'll speak to him privately."
Drake felt as if a cold spear had been shoved through his gullet. Though he knew very well to whom the voice belonged, he could still scarcely believe he was hearing it. When the door closed following Vernon's exit, he found himself unable to move. The voice spoke again.
"Please, turn around and let me see your face."
Very slowly, Drake did as requested, eyes downcast and head bowed.
"Yes, Your Majesty."
"Look at me." Waves of conflicting emotions tore through him until he was no longer able to distinguish anger from love, nor hate from sorrow. He raised his head. The king looked just as he had the last time he'd seen him. Silver hair with streaks of jet black flowed down to his broad shoulders, held back from his brow by a gold circlet. His careworn eyes and fatherly smile brought tears pouring down Drake's cheeks. In the monarch's right hand was a crystal staff crowned with a golden lion. A walking stick, he often called it. But it was far more than that.
It was a mana weapon of such enormous power that it made Drake's P-37 look like a child's toy. With this in his possession, the king hardly needed the protection of the royal guard. He wore a purple satin robe with silver trim and stitching over a silver shirt and black pants. His hands were adorned with rings beset with diamonds and emeralds, and a medallion of pure gold with the Lion of Troy and blood rubies hung from a gold chain around his neck. He was a tiny bit more bent than Drake remembered, though otherwise he seemed not to have aged a day. "I never dreamed I would see you again," the king said. Drake wanted to speak, but feared his tears would turn into open sobs. Nidar sighed and placed his hand on Drake's shoulder. "I know you must hate me for what happened. I wish things could have been different. I hope you believe that." Drake took a moment to compose himself before finally speaking.
"I don't blame you, Your Majesty. You did the only thing you could do."
"I wanted to do more, but the evidence—"
"I understand, Your Majesty."
"Do you? Because I don't. Scarcely a day goes by when I don't think about it, asking myself how it was done and who would do it."
"You shouldn't trouble yourself, Your Majesty. That you believe me to be innocent is all I ever wanted."
"Well, I wanted more for you. And I know I have no right to ask anything of you." Now it was the king's turn to shed tears.
"They have taken my son, Drake. You have to get him back for me." "I will try, Your Majesty. I will do my very best. You have my word."
The king gave him a fragile smile.
"That is what I always admired about you. Most men would say without hesitation that they would get him back. They would say so as if their success were assured. But not you. You always tell me the truth. That is why I never doubted your innocence, and why it was so hard for me to send you away. I would never lie to you, Your Majesty, just as you have never lied to me. And there is one thing you can be certain of. Whoever has done this, I will make them pay for it, even if it takes me the rest of my life to find them."
The king nodded.
"Yes, I know you will.
And you will be amply rewarded for my son's safe return." He gave a small sigh.
"I'm afraid I cannot bring you into the upper city. That would cause an outright feud, and the last thing I want is for the high mages to become involved. However, I will ensure that you are given a place here. You will also be provided with everything you could ever need to make your life as comfortable as possible. That is my word." It was all Drake could do to remain standing. He had fantasized about this moment for 9 long years. Even after all hope had deserted him, it still managed to plague his dreams. And now it was happening. It was actually happening. Thank you, Your Majesty. I dearly wish I could stay longer," the king told him. "I do miss our talks very much." "As do I, Your Majesty."
Drake bowed low.
"Thank you for coming to see me. My boy, you never need to thank me for anything."
He gave Drake's arm a fond squeeze before turning to the door, and then paused before opening it.
"One more thing. When you see Salazar, please tell him that I understand why he did what he did. Also that he is forgiven."
"Your Majesty?"
"He will know what I mean."
After the king had left the apartment, Vernon tossed Drake's weapons carelessly back inside. He could only stand there staring at the floor for the next 15 minutes. Though he would not have said so to the king, he would succeed in his mission. That was the solemn promise he now made to himself. For the rest of the evening he sat in the dark, listening to music from the Hollowviewer. He did his best to clear his mind, but the memories of his past would not be denied, forcing their way in like unwelcome guests, thoughts of his carefree days wandering the halls of Upper Troy with the prince, the stern face of the king when they'd been caught causing mischief that always concealed a forgiving smile, but mostly his time with Lenora. As much as he tried to put her out of his mind, he couldn't. Just being in Troy again was enough, knowing that she was somewhere above him. So very close, and yet unreachable. It was maddening. The young woman who had shown him to the apartment returned briefly, but Drake politely dismissed her. There was nothing more he needed. When he had first arrived, he'd considered taking a long walk around the city. Now, though, since speaking with King Nidar, all he wanted to do was to leave Troy and his memories, and get on with his quest of searching for Prince Salazar. He eventually went to bed. Sleep, however, proved elusive. Several times he got up and just wandered about the apartment, looking in the various drawers and cabinets, even though he already knew perfectly well what was in them. One question was constantly on his mind. How long would he have to wait before setting off? Not long, was his guess. He doubted Xavier was very happy that they had sought him out for the task. He was sure to have his own people out searching for the prince as well. But if the kidnappers were from the provinces, they would see Troyans coming a mile away. He was on yet another of his nocturnal wanderings when a soft, almost inaudible tap sounded at the front door. Hurrying back to the bedroom, Drake snatched up his P-37 just as the door eased open. He leveled the weapon. Whoever this was, they were able to bypass a mana lock. That made them dangerous. From the moment he had touched the doorknob, the mechanism had linked itself uniquely to him. Only someone with magical ability could now bypass that security measure. A sinking thought then occurred as the door swung completely open. If this was a royal guard, they sure as hell were not going to like having a weapon shoved in their face. Well, then, they shouldn't sneak in like this. The instantly recognizable silhouette in the doorway and the scent of perfume had him quickly lowering his gun and stepping back several paces. He had been prepared for just about anything. Anything but this.
Hello, Drake.
Her voice was soft and musical. Stepping inside, she closed the door behind her. He was utterly stunned. Seeing the king had been difficult enough. This was unbearable.
Lenora, he whispered. I wasn't sure if I should come. I didn't know if you would want to see me.
Drake's mind was reeling. Seeing her a little more clearly as she moved into the light coming through the window, he felt a violent ache strike his heart. She was every bit as beautiful as he remembered. Even more so, in fact. Her delicate features had not aged a day, and her slender frame still glided effortlessly as if she were walking upon a cushion of pure mana. Raven hair cascaded in loose, glossy curls over her shoulders and halfway down her back. Then there was her most memorable feature of all. Even in the dim light, he could still clearly see the ice-blue eyes that had once so powerfully captured his heart.
Of course I wanted to see you. I just thought...
He felt dizzy and could hardly get the words out.
I thought you would hate me.
I did. For a long time. But then I came to realize that you were right. If I had come with you, they would never have stopped hunting us. They would have killed you. Instead, here you are now, standing right in front of me. The image of her face, the sorrow in her eyes, and the harshness of her words had never left him. She had desperately wanted to go with him into exile, to abandon her life in Troy. In a weak moment he had almost agreed to this, but he'd quickly come to realize that it could never be. She was the daughter of the king. Their love had been forbidden. Should she have run away, the whole of Vale would have been relentlessly upended. There would have been absolutely nowhere for them to hide.
"I'm sorry I hurt you," he said.
Her smile was sweet, yet somehow distant.
"No, it was I who hurt you. I was angry when I last saw you. I've since spent 9 years regretting every word."
He offered her a seat on the sofa, but she shook her head.
"I cannot stay. I just had to see you at least one time before you left."
Drake suddenly realized that he was standing there in nothing but a pair of cotton pants.
He reached for a shirt he had thrown over the arm of a chair.
I'm glad you came.
While pulling the shirt over his head, he felt her soft touch on his shoulder.
You're injured.
He'd forgotten about the bullet that had struck him in the garage.
It's nothing, he told her. Just a bruise.
He pulled his shirt down and stepped away.
Don't be silly.
She moved closer and placed her hand on the wound. Drake closed his eyes, her touch instantly reminding him of the times he had held her in his arms, and the gentle warmth of her breath on his neck as they'd lain together in the garden, gazing up at the splendor of Troy. The memory faded as the cold tingle of healing magic penetrated his flesh, sending waves of energy pouring into every inch of his body. Only a very few people had a true gift for healing. Lenora was one of them. He had seen her bring people back from the very brink of death with nothing more than a simple touch. When she removed her hand, a soft sigh of relief escaped his lips. He heard her laughing, like silver chimes playing a sweet melody.
Better?
He opened his eyes and saw her smiling at him.
Much better. Thank you.
I have to go now. If my father finds out I came here...
She hesitated, clearly embarrassed to elaborate on this.
Well, you know how things are.
It's fine. I understand. I don't want you to get into trouble.
She leaned in and kissed his cheek.
I think I'm already in trouble. And if I don't leave now, I'll be in even more.
She started toward the door.
You know, I was so happy when I found out it was you they had called upon to rescue my brother.
I won't stop until I find him,
he assured her.
I know that. But the shame of it is, the thought of his rescue was not why I was happy. Not really. It was that it meant you would be returning to Troy.
Without another word, she turned and left. Drake wanted to chase after her. He wanted to tell her of all the things that had built up in his heart for 9 long years. Most of all, he wanted to hold her in his arms again and tell her how much he loved her. But that wasn't possible. So, instead, he just plopped down on the couch and gazed blankly out of the window, until the scent of her perfume had finally faded away. The apartment now felt like a prison, and the morning could not arrive soon enough. He was coming, and whoever had taken Prince Salazar had better damn well pray with all their heart that he still lived. Chapter 5
Wake up!
Drake felt a firm hand shaking his shoulder. He groaned.
What time was it?
Peeling open one eye, he saw Xavier standing over him with a glass of ice water in his hand. He was grinning impishly.
I don't care who you think you are, Drake warned. Pour that over me and I'll smash your teeth out.
Xavier merely laughed.
A mighty threat from a tiny man. Now come on, get up. You have much to do today before you leave.
He held out the glass.
I thought I remembered you being an early riser.
Drake sat up and accepted the water, as much to prevent Xavier from being tempted as from any great desire to drink it. He looked over to the window. Normally he did wake early, at least an hour before the sun was up. But he hadn't slept in a soft bed in a very long time, and the temperature was just the way he liked it. Not too cold, not too warm. He had heard how some people found it difficult to sleep in a comfortable bed after enduring years of hardship, instead choosing a hard floor to rest on. Drake had encountered no such problem.
I assume you are here for a reason, he said. Get dressed,
Xavier told him, turning to the door.
And don't take long about it. Your car is in the front. I'll be waiting.
Drake remained motionless until he heard him leave the apartment, and then took a moment to yawn and stretch.
Yes, this kind of life could definitely make a man soft.
And that would suit him just fine. 9 years of living in filth was more than enough, especially now after having seen Lenora once again. It was the thought of his promise to her that eventually spurred him out of bed.
delaying only long enough to enjoy another rapid, hot shower. He was ready to leave in just a few minutes. Though he'd chosen to wear one of his old V-neck T-shirts and a pair of well-worn jeans from his duffel, he took the much newer clothes from the closet with him anyway. There might well be a useful way of obtaining information later on. Out in the provinces, good quality clothes were even better than money in some cases. The leather jacket was the only item amongst them that he actually put on. This was sturdier than the one destroyed by the assassin's magic, and, quite surprisingly, an even better fit. But he had never liked its short style very much, far preferring a trench coat. Now, though, he would be carrying a sword, and the jacket's broad collar enabled him to wear this across his back without it being awkward. As Drake entered the lift, he recalled the first time he'd been sent to the outer provinces. His partner, Sal, had warned him that things were different out there. But, back then, Drake had been a young man filled with confidence, and the words of warning were shrugged off. "I'm telling you," Sal persisted, "they'll kill you in the blink of an eye if you relax."
"With what?"
he'd replied, certain that the protection his magic provided was impenetrable. "People outside of Troy carry more than just pea shooters, you know." Later that day, the blood pouring from the huge wound in Sal's chest was something he would never forget. It was the first time he had seen a man die, and the first time he had taken a life. It would be far from the last. The few people he passed on his way out of the building shot him sour looks, most of them suspiciously eyeing the sword on his back and the P-37 hanging at his side. To them, he knew he must look like a complete barbarian, a genuine lowlife from the provinces. No one here normally walked around so dangerously armed. A few citizens might be permitted to own a weapon, but never anything more lethal than a small-caliber handgun, nothing that could possibly be a serious threat to the Royal Guard. Not that violence was common. People were far more afraid of being exiled than they were of being assaulted. Crime happened, but mostly petty theft and swindles. And if you were caught, you could always try to make restitution before the authorities became involved. Upon exiting the building, he saw Xavier casually leaning against Cal's hood while fiddling with a small knife. He glanced up at Drake and let out a disapproving sigh.
"Why do you insist on dressing like a provincial dirt dweller?" he mocked. "I had plenty of good clothing provided for you."
"Yes, and if you want me to find Prince Salazar, I can't go around looking like I just stepped out of the lower city," Drake retorted quickly. "That's probably why your people haven't had any luck finding him. They can see your men coming a mile away."
Xavier flicked his wrist.
"I suppose it is a challenge for us to blend in easily with the uncultured and the uneducated. But, thankfully, we have you now. And you certainly seem to have mastered it well enough."
More than ever, Drake wanted to throttle him. He gave a short, humorless laugh.
"Why don't you stop pretending to be something that you're not?"
"What do you mean by that?"
"Your accent. Do you really think people don't know where you're originally from? At least I was never ashamed of who I am."
Drake could see Xavier's jaw tighten. Even as a recruit, he had hated the fact that his father was a lower city dweller.
"I can tell you one thing," he continued. "Should, by some amazing piece of luck, your men do manage to find the prince before me, those at the top will still never accept you as one of them."
"You don't know a thing about me, exile."
"I wish I didn't. Now, if you don't mind, I'm sure the king wouldn't want me hanging around here doing nothing."
Gripping the knife handle with far more force than was necessary, Xavier's eyes briefly burned with hatred. He then composed himself.
"Quite right. However, before we go, I need to show you the alterations we've made to your vehicle."
It was Drake's turn to feel a flash of anger.
"What did you do to her?"
Xavier chuckled, his good humor now fully restored.
"Nothing of which I am sure you wouldn't approve."
Walking over to the trunk, he gestured for Drake to open it. Inside, near the rear, was a small button that had not previously been there. At a touch of Drake's index finger, a section around the button eased open to reveal an added compartment. Inside this were two metal boxes. One contained spare parts for his P-37,
something that had been always exceedingly difficult to come by. In the other was an envelope with 1,000 gold notes and a square piece of foam. A variety of glass files had been placed inside small holes within the foam to keep them from shattering. "I thought this might come in useful," Xavier said. "Each of the files is clearly marked, so I suggest you take time to examine them all once you've left."
"What's in them?"
"Did I not just say to look once you have left?" Drake slammed the trunk.
"What else?"
Xavier entered on the passenger's side and waited for Drake to get behind the wheel. Set in the center console was a blue button and a small holo screen.
"Touch the screen and it will give you your exact location," Xavier informed him.
Drake did as instructed, but nothing happened.
"Good job," he mocked.
"It doesn't work within Troy, that's why. But it will work fine once you're outside the city. Use your fingers to expand the map if you need. Press it firmly and hold, and it will display inside your windshield."
Drake ran his finger over the blue button.
"Don't press that unless you have no choice," warned Xavier. "If you do, everything within 20 feet of the vehicle will get blasted with mana fire. However, this weapon uses a significant amount of fuel, so be careful."
"And the tracking device?"
"Unfortunately, we cannot afford to risk its discovery. For that reason, it currently remains inactive."
He opened the glove compartment and pointed to a tiny silver switch.
"Once you have secured the prints, simply turn it on, and we will immediately be on our way to you. Do not activate it for any other reason."
That the Royal Guard believed the perpetrators of this abduction were capable of detecting a tracking device meant they must know at least something about them. It also suggested that they were far better equipped than the vast majority of lawless elements living outside of Troy.
"Any other little extras I should know about?" he asked.
Xavier closed the glove compartment and leaned back in his seat.
"I think that is quite good for only one night's work. Now, if you don't mind, we're expected at the magistrate's office."
Drake fired the engine and threw Cal into gear. She was sluggish at first, but he knew how to fix that. He had to admit that the additions were quite clever and could likely come in useful, particularly the mana fire. He assumed the files were a variety of poisons, truth serums, and possibly corrosives. After jumping back onto the main highway, he wove his way up to level 1. They were only a few miles away from their destination when, quite suddenly, he pulled over and turned off the engine.
"What are you doing?" Xavier demanded.
Drake pointed to a nearby manga juice shop.
"I'm not leaving without one."
He was literally drooling with expectation as the man behind the counter handed over the frost-covered container. Straight away he gulped in a large mouthful, savoring the sweet flavor on his tongue for several seconds before swallowing. After returning to the car, he settled back in his seat and took several more leisurely drinks, without showing any inclination to start the engine. Xavier was looking more than a little displeased.
"This is by far Troy's greatest accomplishment," Drake remarked.
"If you are done being childish."
Drake laughed.
"Not nearly."
This time he left Cal in front of the magistrate's office. Two men of the Royal Guard were waiting inside to escort them to the rear offices, and Drake followed them, humming merrily as he continued to enjoy regular sips of his juice. The interior was austere and functional. Only holopics of the line of kings disturbed the light grey walls and white tiles. The men and women darting in and out of the offices were all dressed in similar black suits, and each wore a silver medallion on their right lapel, bearing the seal of the magistrate. The magistrate herself was one of the most powerful people in the lower city. Velma Chase had been assigned the office more than 20 years prior, and had since built a reputation for strict adherence to the law, not to mention a cruel and unforgiving disposition. Rumours were that she had issued a warrant for her own son, simply because he had stolen a 20-note from her handbag. Drake hoped she would not be attending whatever meeting Xavier had in store. If he was to live in the lower city once this business was over, better that she did not grow accustomed to seeing his face. He could clearly recall an evening out with his fellow guards,
during which they had encountered a trio of drunken men in a nightclub who worked in this very office. Rather unwisely, one of them had made a slightly off-colour remark about the magistrate in a public place. Only minutes later, all three were escorted from the building, looks of sheer terror on their faces. There was very little that happened in the Lower City that didn't reach Velma's ears, and her employees were under strict orders to always be on their best behaviour. Of course, the Royal Guard had a standard for public behaviour as well, and it was quite high. But at least they were permitted to enjoy themselves from time to time. Following this incident, he had never seen anyone else from this office out on the town again. Not ever. They arrived at a small conference room, where, seated at the table with a sour expression etched deeply into her face, was Velma Chase. Drake heaved a silent sigh. So much for his hope of avoiding her. The woman's silver hair was tied into a neat bun, and her rimmed glasses sat low on the bridge of her wrinkled nose. In addition to the silver pendant everyone else wore, she also had another button bearing a lion of Troy fixed to the left lapel. As her piercing green eyes fell on him, Drake imagined that he felt the temperature in the room drop by several degrees.
"Is it your custom to be tardy?"
she asked, her voice deep for a woman.
"I gave the Royal Guard more credit than that."
"My apologies," Drake replied. "I stopped to buy a mango juice along the way."
He held up the nearly empty cup as evidence.
"I see."
Xavier nodded for the two men escorting them to wait outside. Even he, who vastly outranked a lowly magistrate, looked ill at ease around this woman. Not that he was about to let her cow him.
"Should we have brought you one as well?"
Drake asked her. Her mouth twisted into an even deeper frown.
"Shall we get this over with? I have many other matters to attend, as I am sure do you."
With a smile of acknowledgement, Xavier moved over to the switch and turned off the lights. For a moment, the room was plunged into total darkness. Then there was the hiss of a holo player powering up, and its screen illuminated on the wall behind the table. Xavier and Drake both took seats, while the magistrate retrieved a small silver box with a series of buttons from the briefcase beside her chair.
"I assume that the captain has already informed you why you are here,"
she began.
"In that case, I will get right to the point. 6 weeks ago, Prince Salazar left Troy without an escort, and was captured by a radical group known as Exodus."
"Exodus?" Drake frowned. "Never heard of them."
"I'm not surprised," she said. "They work very hard to hide their presence. But it is our belief that they have been behind almost every major act of dissent for the past 20 years.
Drake drew back.
"Impossible. No one could avoid detection for that long. Certainly not a group of any size or significance."
His remark instantly drew a stern look from the magistrate.
"You will please refrain from any further interruptions," she snapped,
then allowed a moment of silence to develop, in order to punctuate her severity. Satisfied that she had made her point, she continued.
"Now, then, it has taken my office a very long time to piece together what little we know about them. They are led by a woman named Zara, at least that is the name she goes by. Who she really is, I couldn't say. All we know for certain is that she comes from the provinces, and her followers are fanatical. It is our belief that they intend to use the prince as a hostage, in order to force the king to shut down the power station."
"What?"
Such was his surprise, Drake was unable to hold his tongue.
"Who in their right mind would want that?"
"Someone wanting to take over Vale," Xavier told him.
"That is our assessment,"
Velma confirmed.
"This, of course, we cannot allow. Unfortunately, the Royal Guard has so far been unsuccessful in locating where the prince is being held. Time is passing, and the king is becoming increasingly worried."
"So, naturally, His Royal Majesty thought of you,"
Xavier added, with just a tiny hint of distaste in his voice. Drake shifted in his seat.
"Before I do anything, I need to know why the prince was outside of the city without protection." "Actually, you do not," Velma corrected. Though, rest assured, you will be given all the information considered necessary for your task."
She pressed a button on the silver box, and an image of a large warehouse appeared on the screen.
"This is the last place we were able to track the prince's whereabouts. It is a storage facility in Indra. We believe that this is the place where Exodus abducted him."
"What's kept in this facility?"
Drake asked. Indra was an outer province to the north, very nearly as poor as Aurora.
"Nothing of particular interest. Medical supplies are occasionally sent there to be separated before distribution. That's about all."
Drake tried to think of what else might be in the area, but came up empty.
"From there we have no idea what happened,"
Velma continued.
"Needless to say, our efforts to uncover Exodus have been stepped up dramatically. So far, however, let me guess,"
Drake cut in.
"They always seem to be one step ahead of you."
There was clear annoyance on her face.
"Yes. We've captured a few of their operatives, but they always die the moment they're in custody. It's some sort of remote suicide that we're still trying to identify. They simply send out a signal, and a moment later they're dead."
"Just like the man who had attacked him in the garage," Drake recalled.
"Does this sound familiar?"
she asked, seeing the recognition on his face. Drake nodded.
"Yes. I heard something about it a while back, though I didn't pay much attention at the time."
The lie slipped out easily enough. The last thing he needed was Xavier getting too close and mucking things up. Hearing what had happened might spur his unwanted interest. The magistrate clicked the button again, and an image of a young man appeared. His dark hair and copper skin gave his sharp features a striking, almost sinister look.
"This is Samuel Friedman, a former instructor at the College of Mages, but now what you call a hawker. Since being expelled, he goes by the name of Bane."
Bane. Drake had definitely heard the name. Many times, in fact. His reputation was sketchy at best. A real killer. And young. But very good at his job.
"Our information suggests that he may know how to make contact with Exodus,"
Xavier told him.
"Bane's hard to find,"
Drake responded.
"Any idea where I should start?"
With another click, a new face appeared, one that Drake recognized instantly.
"I see that you are familiar with this one,"
the magistrate remarked.
"You're damn right I am. That's the son of a bitch who tried to kill me."
Staring at him from the screen with narrow eyes set in a round face, smirking with confidence and with what little hair he still had tied into a wispy ponytail, was his double-crossing client.
"Fortunately for us, he failed. But that should make your job much easier. Bane is in his direct employ. Start there, and you should be able to find Exodus."
She clicked another button and the screen went blank.
"That's it?"
asked Drake.
"If there were more, I would have told you."
He knew she was definitely hiding something. He could see it in her expression, and hear it in the tone of her voice. Something wasn't right about all of this. The client, a man named Bolton Fisk, was a known criminal who had managed widespread bribery of the authorities and had a fierce reputation for terrorizing anyone who might even consider bearing witness against him, which most of the time simply meant that they died. Fisk practically owned the outer provinces in the west, and had nearly as much influence in the south. When Drake was still serving with the Royal Guard, word had reached him about Fisk stealing badly needed medical supplies, and then charging desperate hospitals outrageous sums to supply them. He had pressured the magistrate's office to take action, but no one could ever link Fisk directly to any crime. He was too clever for that. In the end, Drake had decided the matter was not worth his time to keep pursuing, a typical attitude for someone living in the upper city.
Funny how things change.
He had not known at first that it was Fisk who'd hired him. Not that it would have mattered. He had never seen him until 3 weeks prior, when he'd been hired to find a runner who had stolen a truck filled with bolts of cotton. Though if he had known it was Fisk, he would not have been surprised to find out the runner had been killed, or that the sheriff was too afraid to do anything about it. Xavier rose to his feet and turned on the lights.
"If that is all, we should go," he said.
Drake regarded the magistrate for a long moment. Though her face betrayed nothing to the eyes of most people, Drake was highly adept at reading subtleties. She still had something to say. He was certain of that.